Mental illness is epidemic in America, and the problem is spreading worldwide. It's time for decisive action, because the battle for the mind is part of a much larger war being waged between good and evil, with you as the prize. Welcome to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings. For the next hour, we'll uncover Bible-based weapons for fighting destructive feelings and resolving inner conflicts. Dr. Jennings wants to arm you with the tools necessary for achieving emotional and mental stability as you strengthen your relationship with God. We'll open the phone lines for your questions in just a moment. I'm your Simple Solutions host, Charles Mills.
And welcome to the program. I heard a conversation the other day that's very typical of what you hear on modern school grounds. One young person was talking with a friend, and it sounded something like this. My dad, that's my real dad, is coming over to the house to help my stepdad fix the car. My mom said that my uncle, the one who is my stepdad's brother, which means he's really not my uncle, but I'm supposed to call him that, is coming too and bringing his son, who would be my cousin if my stepdad was my real dad. Then we're going to go over to grandma's house. That's my real grandma's house because she's my real dad's mother, not my stepdad's mother, who isn't my grandma, but she looks kind of like my real grandma, only shorter. We're going over to her house for supper. I hope she bakes her famous peach pie because I love her peach pie. My stepdad's first wife bakes pies too, but they're not as good. Her son, who I guess is kind of like my stepbrother or something, is a real pain in the neck. I'd tell him to leave me alone, but hey, we're related. Sorta. Blended families. Never have family trees boasted so many grafted limbs. You almost need a scorecard to know the players in this complicated social game. But beyond the confusion of just how you're related to whom is how you relate to each member dangling from your convoluted family tree. For many, there's no problem. They love everyone. But for others, making room in the heart for blended family members can be a real challenge. Let's talk with Dr. Timothy Jennings about how to survive and thrive when your world becomes an endless rerun of the Brady Bunch. Dr. Jennings, let's begin with the kids. Moms and dads understand what's happening when they move on to different partners, but their kids sometimes feel lost. What should a parent do and say to make the transition a little easier?
Yeah, great question, and you're exactly right. These times are often very difficult for the children to go through, and the age of the child makes a difference on what we say, so I'm going to give a general answer, but the answer needs to be massaged or modulated appropriately to the age of the child, as children can comprehend things differently depending on where they are in the developmental process. But generally, the focus of the parent needs to understand that when a family breaks down, and we're going to assume that this is not a totally abusive situation where the children are relieved because they've been beaten every day by an abusive spouse, and it's actually a therapeutic thing for the divorce to occur for the child. We're going to assume that it's done because the husband and wife don't get along, but there's good relationships from both parents with the kids. We're gonna assume that scenario. In that scenario, the children are fearful or anxious because the two most important people in their life are pulling apart, and it makes them feel as if the basis for security, safety in this world is being shattered or fractured. And so what needs to happen during this process is there needs to be a lot of communication from both parents to the kids that this is not going to change or fracture the relationship that the child has with either parent. And there needs to be a significant effort where both parents work with each other to provide a stable and healthy relationship with the child to both parents. One of the most destructive things that happens is in hearts and minds of people who have significant insecurity, fear, jealousy, envy, these types of motives in their heart, that when it comes to dealing with the kids, they actually play against each other, the kids against each other. And so a mother or a father may feel insecure or upset when the child is spending time with the other parent. If the other parent gets to do something fun with the child and the child comes excitedly home telling, we went and rode horses today, the other parent may feel irritated or angry. And then they will actually subtly or not so subtly, undermine in the child's eyes the esteem that they have for the other parent. This is the destructive thing that happens. And so during a divorce proceeding or when the families are splitting apart, both parents need to work very, very hard to allow that child to develop a healthy relationship with the other parent.
I'm assuming that because of the difference in personalities of kids, that some would have less problems with this as others. Is there any way a parent can know early on that this child of mine is going to have a real problem if I decide to divorce my husband or my wife and go off with someone else here? Is there any indication that that child is going to have a problem with this?
All children are going to have a problem with this. Okay? All children are going to have a problem. You don't have to say personality or disposition. If you, when divorces occur, it has an impact on all children. Okay? But that doesn't mean that staying together is going to have a good influence on the kids. It really depends on the quality of what's happening in the home. A child raised in a home which mom and dad hate each other, can't stand to be near each other, fight with each other constantly. Maybe they don't fight with the kids, but the kids are in an environment where there's just conflict. There's just hostility. There's just hatred. There's just disgruntled attitudes constantly. This is an unhealthy environment for a child too. So if that environment can't be improved, an environment with the separation where when the child's at home, there's a peaceful environment, a happy environment, a nurturing environment would be much healthier for the child than to live in this toxic environment where mother and father hate each other all the time. So Yes, even you can't divorce without it having an impact on the child, but each circumstance is so different that you couldn't give a cookie-cutter rule that would apply to all families.
It sounds like you're saying, Dr. Jennings, that the idea of staying together for the kids may not always be a good idea.
Certainly not always a good idea. I mean, we don't talk in absolutes. There are times when staying together is the worst thing you can do for the kid, and there are times when staying together is the best course of action for the children. I mean, each circumstance has to be evaluated based on the various variables in that particular family. But the motive here is taking decisions and actions that are designed to keep the child in a place of healthy relationship with healthy parents. Where they can grow in a place where they feel safe and secure, where they don't feel like they're going to be abandoned, they're going to be rejected, where they don't internalize a personal blame for the fact that the family broke down. There's a lot of work that has to be done with children because they will not openly tell their parents how they're internalizing these things, but they will often internalize these things in a way that is negative towards the self, where they feel, well, you know, my mom didn't love me, or I'm not as good as the other kids, and so forth and so on. And they get this really negative self stuff going in their head that affects the decisions throughout the rest of their life. So there has to be a lot of good groundwork done if a family is breaking apart to help protect the kids and insulate them from some of this damage that can occur.
Let's talk about that groundwork for just a bit, Dr. Jennings. I'm trying to put my mind around the fact that it is almost inevitable in today's society that this is going to happen because the divorce rate is just continuing to climb, and you know, 50-50 chance of staying together. So you might as well start thinking about this stuff now. Or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you should not think about this. Should a husband and wife who seem to be perfectly okay, but you know, have the problems that most husbands and wife have, should they be thinking about how to rightfully split up the family, even though it may not be in their mind at this moment because they want to be prepared?
I don't think that's reasonable. I think you said there's a 50-50 chance. That is not true. There's a 50-50 chance when you're talking about the population as a whole. But there's not a 50-50 chance on each individual. That doesn't apply to an individual couple. An individual couple can either raise their chances or significantly reduce their chances based on the circumstances of how they enter into the relationship to start with. If you meet somebody online and you've spent 3 hours with them and you go down to the justice of the peace and you get married because you're so infatuated, you're raising the likelihood higher than 50% you're going to get a divorce. Okay. If, on the other hand, you do your due diligence and you date over time, get to know the person, make intelligent, not just emotionally based decisions on the qualifications and qualities of that person and your compatibility together, and you have an other-centered love approach where you both have your hearts committed to Christ, you significantly reduce the likelihood, less than 50% they're going to get a divorce. So the stat that 50% people divorce is not applicable to any particular couple.
All right. That is good news, actually. We're going to open our phone lines right now because, listener, you may have a question on this important topic, blended families today. 800-775-4673 is the number, 800-775-4673. Dr. Jennings is here to help you as you face this, as you deal with this, and as your kids deal with it. Give us a call right now, 800-775-4673. Stay tuned.
Here's your Daily Heartbeat with Dr. James Markham. Many days I talk to patients in the office and I try to give them a biblical prescription. They might be on all the right medications at the right doses, but I try to give them something new. And the biblical prescription I like to share with you today is let's get outside and take care of the earth. You know, we were originally designed to take care of the earth, to take care of the plants, to take care of the animals. There's something that special happens to our chemistry when we do what God originally planned us to do. He originally planned us to take care of the earth we live in. We also know when we're outside, we activate a chemical, vitamin D, which helps change our chemistry for the good. So one of your biblical treatments for the day to change your chemistry is get outside, take care of the earth, take care of God's creatures, and you'll change your chemistry.
Thank you, Dr. Markham. If you'd like more information, go to heartwiseministries.org. That's heartwiseministries.org.
The effects of the 2005 hurricane season continue to be felt. And this is Jeremy Woodruff, and not long ago I was talking with a friend who had spent some time in Mississippi helping with the cleanup effort along the Gulf Coast. He said that a large percentage of the houses have been so heavily damaged they couldn't even be repaired. Whole towns are being completely rebuilt. And while our hearts go out to those whose lives have been turned upside down, it occurred to me that spiritually speaking, that may not be a bad place to be. If the storms of life have eroded the foundations of your belief structure, God can help you start over again, building on the solid ground of His Word. If you'd like a tool to help you in a spiritual reconstruction, I offer you the Discover Bible Lessons, a set of free Bible studies that are delivered right to your mailbox. Just call 800-775-4673 to begin building your life on the rock, Jesus Christ our Savior. Ask for Discover when you call 800-775-HOPE.
Back to Simple Solutions. I'm your host, Charles Mills. We're here with Dr. Timothy Jennings, Christian psychiatrist and author, and we're talking about blended families today. Perhaps, listener, you are a member of a blended family. Perhaps you are heading in that direction, or perhaps you don't want to head in that direction. Well, we want you to be prepared for whatever's going to happen. And Dr. Jennings, I think I made a mistake. I suggested that maybe it's a good idea for couples to think about this down the road, but I have a feeling that you don't agree with that.
No, that's right. I think that if we what we plan for, we usually end up and achieve. And people going into marriage should be laying down the groundwork for an eternity together, not planning for an eventual separation. If you plan for an eventual separation at the get-go, you're most likely to, you know, achieve that goal by the plans that you've laid. So I think that would not be a wise course of action to do.
Of course, when we talk about blended families, we're talking about the failure of something, a marriage that didn't work.
And not always the case. Blended families happen because there have been deaths in the family. And,
That's true.
And so it's not always because of a failure. Sometimes there's a tragedy that has occurred, and there's a death, and then there's a new family gets together this way. So it's not always. Sometimes there's adoptions that occur because of tragedies and the parental loss and those types of things. So not all blended families are due to divorce.
Well, let's talk to the ones that are due to divorce, the blended families that come along because of divorce. When you marry someone, you have in your mind that you want to be married forever and that this union is going to carry over into heaven. When time goes by and you begin to realize that that's not going to happen, what are some of the things you need to start doing to keep that type of blended family from ever happening? I know we're asking vast questions here, Dr. Jennings, but I know there are people right now who are saying, I don't want to ever go through that. I don't want to go through a divorce. I want to stay married. What are some of the secrets that you have found, the tips that you could give us now that generally help people stay on course so a blended family never has to take place?
A couple of principles that can be applied across all circumstances. One, healthy relationships require healthy people. So the number one thing that any individual person can do to maximize the likelihood of a healthy relationship is to step back and say, okay, what needs to change in me to move me from where I am to the healthier person that I am today? If it's a guy, what can I do to be the healthiest husband I can possibly be, the healthiest father I can possibly be? What changes do I need to make in me that can bring to bear more and more of God's love and His methods and His principles into my marriage? What happens oftentimes when there's tension is that we have small minds and we don't look inwardly at ourselves and what we can change. We instead try to find fault with the other person, and we begin to point out the defects and the inconsistencies and the shortcomings of our spouse, and they do likewise to us, and it ends up in a pitched battle and war of criticism towards each other. If we would step back and actually look at ourselves and say, what is it that I'm bringing to the situation that is strengthening our marriage? What is it that I'm doing that's hurting our marriage, and how can I change that? And working with your partner actually to help you bring change to self will be a significant benefit. That is a major factor that one can do.
So when a husband and wife sit down together and gazing into each other's eyes, they need to talk about this. They need to say, here are some of the things that we need to do to keep this marriage strong. Should this actually be a conversation they have?
It certainly can be if there are problems and stressors. What's going on? The relationship isn't working as I'd hoped. There are some things that are uncomfortable to me. Can we talk about this? And then you can dialogue and discuss it. But you ask the question, what can we do? It's looking at self and taking responsibility for our own self instead of externalizing and blaming other people for the problems we're in. But there's another truth that has to be remembered, and that is we have to be truthful about the facts that we're dealing with and not allow our wishes, our fantasies, our desires, our hopes, our dreams to shade what we're actually dealing with. And here's the facts. Even if you are perfect, even if you are absolutely perfect love in every way, never made a mistake at all in your entire life, doesn't guarantee a good outcome in a relationship, because relationships require two. And I give you just the example of God and Lucifer. God never made any mistakes. He was perfect love in every way. And the relationship with his firstborn son, his first created being, Lucifer, that relationship ended because of Lucifer's rebellion, because of Lucifer's wickedness, not because of some defect on God's part. And so not that any of us are absolutely perfect in any way, but the point being is you can be doing all within your human power as God enables you to try to be a healthy, loving spouse and still be married to someone who has no desire to be a healthy, loving spouse in return. And that relationship will not be healthy. And the healthiest course, if you find yourself in a circumstance like that, is to do as God did. Lucifer is cast out of heaven, and sometimes spouses need to be cast out of the home.
Well, as you see your relationship begin to deteriorate, Dr. Jennings, how do you know whose fault it is? Maybe the fault is the wrong word. How do you know what is driving this wedge here? A lot of us tend to think, it's my fault. My spouse is perfect, and I am not. And so this is my fault. What's happening is my fault. I'm going to destroy the marriage. I'm going to have my kids having to live in a blended family. I am going to be the problem here. How do you identify whether it's you or whether it's your spouse?
Again, we have to step back and look at the evidences and the facts, ask the questions, what are the contributing factors you've made. Sometimes you need to get outside counsel, because when the emotions are very intense, we often don't see as clearly the realities of what's going on with us. And so outside counsel from somebody with experience in these matters can be quite beneficial, not to change your life, but in circumstances like this, outside counsel just allows you to see things you can't see as clear to yourself. Very much like when you have dirt on your face, you look in a mirror. The mirror does not remove the dirt. It only lets you see the dirt that you could not otherwise see. Outside counsel can do the same thing, can allow you to see the dirt in your own life that you are not able to currently see, and then you have to choose whether you're going to clean that up or not.
This outside counsel, would that be a friend or a pastor? Who would that be?
Someone who has experience in dealing with these types of problems.
Oh, okay. All right. In other words, your next door neighbor or your sister may not be the right person.
No, they would not be. No, because most of those people will not give you the feedback you need. They're going to give you the feedback you want to hear and tell you your face looks great, even though you got dirt all over it.
Yeah.
They don't tell you've got the chive in your tooth. Okay. And so you need somebody that's going to be honest with you in a supportive way, and you know you're getting feedback that will be beneficial that you can then choose to do something with. So a professional counselor is often needed in circumstances like this, again, for the primary purpose to help you see what you're not able to see in your own right. And if you could fix it on your own, then you would have already done it. I've really not had people come to see me with significant marriage difficulties who didn't have a desire to get it fixed. But if they could have already done it, they would have. Now, think about this. If you have a broken leg, you've had an accident at home, you've fallen, you've broken your leg. Are you going to go and try to set the bone yourself? Or are you going to go get professional help? Now, you could get some splints out, you could tie some rags around, you could try to set that bone yourself. It's probably not going to work so well. You'll probably get a much better outcome if you see an orthopedic surgeon. Well, likewise, bone setting is actually, in many ways, a lot more direct and easy to accomplish than setting broken relationships right. broken relationships, right, have a lot more nuance and subtlety to them. And so if we're going to seek professional help for a bone, don't we need to seek sometimes professional help for broken relationships?
I'm going to ask you a real personal and weird question here, Dr. Jennings. When you are sitting across the room from someone whose marriage is falling apart, what you say to that person, did you learn that in school or did you learn that by experience? Where did most of what you say come from?
I think it's a combination of all my life experience, my education, my professional training, my research, my my relationship with God, my understanding of human relationships, my own life experience. All that comes into bear. It's not one little thing. It all comes into bear.
Yeah. But what you have that we don't have is a way of organizing that. I'm trying to figure out why you can do it and we can't do it ourselves.
Why can a surgeon set the bone better than you can set the bone?
Because he's done it before, because he studied bones, because he has taken classes in setting bones.
Okay. And not only did he take classes, after he took the classes and education, he had lots of experience with lots of different circumstances, with lots of different different presentations. And all that experience helps him over time gain more and more expertise at doing that type of process. Same thing happens with professional counseling. Not only do they get the education that gives them the basis to understand these dynamics, but then they get lots of experience from lots of different settings and circumstances that they can bring to bear on the problem. So that perspective, the wider the perspective, the greater the depth of education and experience, then the more accurate the mirror will be to show the areas of that need to be worked on.
All right. Because, you know, I've heard so many Christians say, you know, the Lord and I should be able to work this thing out. The Lord should tell me what I need to do.
Well, and if they were to actually...
That doesn't work. I'm trying to figure out why it doesn't work.
Because they're not listening to the Lord. Bottom line, if they were actually listening to the Lord, then they could work it out. But see, people, this is, it says in Jeremiah 17, it says the human mind is deceitful above all things, utterly wicked, who can know it? People often use the Lord as a way of avoiding taking any personal responsibility, and they will distort concepts of God and distort what the Lord says so they can continue to hold on. So, in fact, there's been good scientific research that shows that religiosity, the higher the religiosity, the higher the likelihood of childhood abuse in a home.
My.
You see, not spirituality. The higher spirituality, the lower the risk of childhood abuse in the home. Religiosity is what people use so they can hide from the actual defects in their heart. And I see this all the time. These hyper-religious people that are critical, they're overbearing, they're controlling, they're maniacal, they're manipulative, yet they're in church each week. They're often deacons in the church, and they're very structured, and they're very rigid, and they're very critical of other people, and they're very abusive in their homes. And I've got many patients who grew up as kids, pastor's kids, elder's kids, deacon's kids, and these were homes where there was extreme religiosity but not spirituality. And so people often use God, and they'll talk, well, God and I should be able to work. I don't need no help from no psychologist. I can work this out on my own. Okay? And I see this kind of closed-minded thinking all the time. But it's a way for them to avoid actually any personal responsibility because they're so insecure, they're so fear-ridden, that they don't want anybody. Remember what Jesus said? Those in darkness, they don't want to come into the light. The light will expose their wickedness. And so many people are so insecure with their own ugliness of character that they don't want to come into the light to see the defects in themselves. They'd rather hide behind their pretentious piety and throw stones at others and blame their own family for their own shortcomings.
Boy, I know that there are some listening right now who I hope are saying, ooh, that sounds kind of like me, and I need to make some adjustments. Let's find out what those adjustments are, and let's talk more about what happens when two families blend. This can be traumatic. Sometimes it's necessary, as Dr. Jennings says, a death of a spouse or an adoption. That's all things that happen. But the results of that can be very positive. Even the results of a blended family as a result of divorce can be very positive if there are certain guidelines followed as you blend those families. 800-775-4673. Stay tuned.
For nearly 1,000 years, the world was dominated by the iron hand of the Roman Empire. They reinvented civilization with new technologies like aqueducts that carried water over hundreds of miles, roads that spanned from Persia to Spain. Their literature is still read in American universities. They changed the world in many ways, but by 100 AD, the Roman government was weak and unstable. Their entertainment became gruesome and perverse. By 500 AD, their army was helpless against the raids of Attila the Hun. What happened? Many theories exist to this day. But history shows that the real killer was moral decay. Some modern theologians debate whether a similar moral decay in this country will lead to our collapse. It's a sobering thought. But remember 2 Chronicles 7:14 promises that if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and heal their land. From Life Talk Radio.
Brian Bradley's hands have built a lot of houses over the years. Carla Sanchez's hands have made more great meals than she can remember. And Gary Murdoch's hands have taught chopsticks to lots of kids. These hands have done so much in life. They can do so much for life by practicing fire safety. Make your home safe from fire. Maintain smoke alarms on every level in your home. And test and replace the batteries in each alarm. Plan and practice an escape route. Know at least 2 exits from every room and be sure you know how to open your windows. Prevent fire, save lives, so you'll be able to give others a hand. For more information on how to keep your home safe from fire, go to our website at www.usfa.fema.gov. A message from the U.S. Fire Administration.
Jesus said in John 14:27, "Peace I leave with you. My peace I give you. Do not let your hearts be troubled and do not be afraid." Do you long for that peace in your life? Let's return to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings.
Welcome back to the program. We're talking about blended families today. The Mix That Matters is the name of our program. And we've been discussing the events that take place that lead to a blended family, but let's put those in the past now, as I am supposing, Dr. Jennings, you suggested the people that blend families do, put the past in the past. And let's move on here. Let's make sure that this new family works as it should. Dr. Jennings, when the kids move in with their suitcase in hand and here's stepdad or stepmom and everything is very, very different, what kind of guidance would you give that child, should the parent give that child, as they ease into this brand new life with brand new sights and sounds?
Well, before we answer that question, we need to talk about the transition time. And that as you leave, one of the biggest mistakes I see people make as they go out of one relationship and they end the divorce is that they don't take time to learn the lessons from the past. What happened? Why did our marriage that started out with such hope, such dreams, such promise end in divorce? Where did we go wrong? What can I learn from this circumstance so that I can reduce the likelihood of ever having such a thing happen again? Instead of taking the time to be very introspective, very reflective, with God's grace, trying to grow and mature, learn from the experience so that you're a healthier person coming out of that relationship than you were going in. Oftentimes, instead, people will rush right out of one relationship and right into another relationship because they're hurt, because they're lonely, because they feel dejected, they feel rejected, and they want some, and the new relationship gives them a sense of affirmation, lets them know that they're not worthless, as they're often struggled with feelings like this. And so they end up in relationships without having learned anything from the first, and they go into the relationship still battered, still bruised, still emotionally hurt. And as I said earlier, healthy relationships require healthy people. And if we don't heal ourselves from the first relationship before we go into the second, then we are increasing the likelihood of just another bad outcome. And so I'm not suggesting people should just forget what's behind. We should learn from history, take those lessons into our hearts and minds, grow, mature, transform through God's grace so that we are different people as we move forward than we were when we went into the first relationship. And then we can move on now and discuss the questions about how do we deal with kids, and exactly what was your question about dealing with kids?
Well, before we do that, learn from the past. What if we don't know what went wrong? We just know it went wrong.
That's why you need to see a professional counselor. A professional counselor will help you see what went wrong. If you have no clue what went wrong, go see a professional counselor. A professional counselor, if you give a reasonable history of the events that occurred in your relationship, will be able to help you see what went wrong, and particularly what your contributions were and where those decisions were made that went wrong. Oftentimes, and this is not exclusive, this is not always true, but oftentimes what went wrong before you even got married. And what went wrong was there were already evidences revealed about the incompatibility of this person for you, but you chose to ignore those incompatibilities because your feelings were so infatuated with the other person. You didn't want to go through the pain of losing them. It was going to be too hurtful at the time. And so you pushed forward and married the person anyway, hoping with, and this is the games we play. We'll do things like this. Well, I know he could be such a wonderful guy if only he was this. I know he doesn't really mean it. We all have problems. We can just grow. And we make these excuses in our minds for the deficiencies that a person has now instead of making decisions based on their actual qualifications. And when we're moving into a marriage, we have to ask the question, not does this person one day have the potential to, if all matters go right in the universe, become this really cool person that could be healthy for me to marry? It's, does this person today possess those qualities? Are they qualified today to be my spouse? And if they're not, it's not, will they one day be that person? It's, today they're not qualified, I can't marry them. And if, and they may never be qualified. And the danger happens when we have these feelings of attraction and we marry based on fear of, well, I'm afraid if I don't marry him now, and I give him time to grow or give her time to grow, well, she may find somebody else and I may lose them and I never be with them again. I could never live with that. That's fear-based marriage, not love-based marriage. And those relationships are set up to fail. When we base marriages on insecurities and fears rather than on love and regard for the other person, then we are increasing the likelihood those marriages won't work out. So we need to learn these lessons, deal with our own insecurities and fears, our own wounds, our own heartaches, get ourselves in the healthiest position we can be before we move into a second relationship.
If a woman is divorced and she has 3 kids, 9, 6, and 4, and she finds this guy that she finds attractive and thinks that'd be a good mate, is there any way that she can tell whether he's going to be a bad father or a good father? Or he's never done it before. He's never had kids before. And she wants a good dad for her kids. Are there any red flags, warning signs that maybe this is not the right person at this time?
Well, first question is, when does she allow him to meet the kids? And my recommendation for women in a situation like that is, when they're in the dating phase, they've already dealt with their own issues, they're in a healthy place, they're ready to start dating again, is that they don't bring every guy that they're dating home to meet the kids. They only bring somebody home that they get to the point that this has gotten to a serious, steady relationship that could build to the point of marriage. And until that point, the kids don't even meet the guy she's dating, because bringing guys in, guys out, date for a few weeks, break up, date for a few months, break up, is very traumatizing to the kids. It starts building attachments, and they have all these loss over again, loss over again, loss over again, and it increases insecurity and fear. So we're talking about blended families and how we make this transition. We want to remember that we don't bring every person home that we're dating for the kids to meet. We only bring home somebody who meets the level that they've gone through the vetting process of the dating process to the point that you are serious enough now that you could consider marriage. But you can't consider marriage to somebody who won't make a good father or mother to your children. So it gets to that point that's the next question that needs to be answered. Then you let them meet the kids. And you observe. Remember that a person's behavior, their conduct, how they relate, how they act is revelations of who they are. So not just what they say. People may say things like, oh yeah, I like kids. How do they act with your kids? Do they take the initiative? Do they spontaneously do things for your kids without being told? Do they want to spend time with your kids? Do your kids enjoy being around them? Watch your kids. Your kids have good sixth sense. They can perceive the nonverbal cues of whether somebody really likes them or somebody's only pretending to like them. So watch your kids and see what's going on with your kids. Now, that is not 100% always black and white, because sometimes kids coming out of a divorce situation may have a lot of feelings still and fantasies about reconciling mom and dad. And they may, because of those fantasies about reconciling mom and dad, purposely want to sabotage any other relationship. And so that's not 100% guarantee, but it is information that you want to take into your mind as you're making these assessments.
So you use the kids as a sounding board, but you really have to
not as a sounding board. No, that is not right. Not as a sounding board.
Okay.
You do not use the kids as a sounding board. I did not say that. A sounding board means you go and process things over with your kids. You do not process these things over as far as, hey, mommy's thinking about this. What you do is you can ask them their opinions. Hey, how did you like so-and-so? What happened today? Those types of things. Just as you would if with any one of their other friends or any one of the other people that comes over and visits your kids. You want their perspective, but you don't bounce your feelings, your ideas, your emotions, your questions off of your kids. They're not your sounding board.
All right. So when the mother, in this case, she has a decision to make because she may be falling in love with this guy, and the kids are giving indications that, you know, he's going to be an abusive father. He's not going to be there for me. He's going to be someone I don't want to have around. She has a very tough decision to make whether she's going to live her life for her husband to be or for her kids. Am I right?
Only if she's not balanced. Okay, if she actually has her priorities straight and has love in her heart straight, she understands her responsibilities are to her kids first. Okay, and she puts her kids first. It's not an issue. It's when we keep self first. And if that's the problem, if she's really struggling, as you described, then she's not ready to marry. And then that's one of the key issues that led to her divorce in the first place, because she still keeps self first rather than others first. And when we keep self first, we can't love others well. And we get into marriages. What happens off the time is people stand up and they take their marriage vow, forsaking all others till death do us part. They inaccurately think that means forsaking all other people of the opposite sex. No, yeah, forsaking all others, meaning that we are to die to self as well, and we are to put the spouse in second place behind God. God first, spouse second. Self doesn't come first. And see, what happens in relationships, often people put the spouse higher up than everybody else in the community, but self still comes before spouse. And so when there's conflicts in the home, it's all about, you didn't meet my needs. You didn't do what I wanted. You didn't give me what I needed. You didn't. And so I is always in the way. And if a mother is struggling with, well, I have my needs, and I need to get my needs met, and they're telling you, by definition, that they are not ready for a marriage, and that marriage that they get into is going to be unhealthy.
In this situation, you're saying that we should put God first, kids second, potential spouse third. Am I right? And then self after that.
God first.
God first, uh-huh.
Yeah, God first. And then when you're getting married, the spouse would be second, but kids then would come in there right there with the spouse, and the kids actually, while they don't enter into that sacred relationship of a husband-wife, there are times when the needs of the kids will supersede the needs of the spouse.
There you go. There you go. All right. Okay. 800-775-4673. Listener, if you have a question on this very important topic, this is an extremely important topic today in our world. We'd love to hear from you. Question or comment, 800-775-4673. Dr. Jennings would be happy to talk to you about your situation, and perhaps what he tells you can help others too, and perhaps you can share what you've learned along the way too. Here's the number again, 800-775-4673. Okay, this...
I just got a question from a listener that emailed that emailed us in and said they'd like us to discuss... how do we address solutions, healthy methods of dealing with spiritually unequally yoked families or unequally blended families when there are different spiritual values in the family?
Good question.
One member of the family is a believer and a friend of God, and maybe one member is not. How do you deal with that? So I think that's a great question. And the member who is, first off, I would have to say, if we address this as the parents, the two adults getting together, rather than one of the children not being a believer, then the first question is, okay, we need to evaluate before we ever marry. That's one of the things that qualifies somebody for marriage, is that they have the same spiritual value system that you have. And I counsel extremely strongly, and I tell people who are in relationships that are talking about marriage that have clear differences in spiritual values, they need to end that relationship. They need to move on and find somebody else. But if we're already in that circumstance, and let's say you got together and you thought you had the same spiritual values, and maybe some events occurred and somebody has just made a major change, and maybe somebody got converted, maybe somebody left the church and there was a major change, the person who knows God well has the responsibility of living godly principles and bringing that godly light into the home. So the pressure would be on the person who knows God well to be a person who speaks the truth in love, leaving your spouse free to make up their own decisions. As long as the spouse is willing to be extending of those principles to you, well, they leave you free to make up your own mind. They're not abusive. They're not coercive. They leave you free to practice the methods that you believe are important in your life. Then there would be no reason to leave. But if they begin abusing and dominating, controlling, then you'd have to evaluate the health of staying in that environment.
Okay, we'll talk more about this on our return. Again, our phone lines are open, or you can also email us at www.commonreason.com, and there's a link there for emailing your question to him right here to the studio this instant. That's at www.commonreason.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Too many Christians don't know the truth about dinosaurs, but Christian scientist Dr. Elaine Graham Kennedy is out to change that. Dr. Kennedy is a research scientist who has done field work at dig sites in remote places like Patagonia. She has spent her life studying dinosaurs. And now she has published a remarkable book called Dinosaurs, published by Pacific Press, that is both scientifically based and biblically sound. It answers the questions many Christians ask. Did dinosaurs really live? Are dinosaur bones fake? Who made the dinosaurs? What happened to them? And were dinosaurs on Noah's Ark? Dr. Kennedy's book, Dinosaurs, is filled with interesting facts, photographs, and colorful charts. It is a must for every Christian home and perfect for reading with your kids. To get a copy, visit www.pacificpress.com or call 1-800-765-6955.
I was 8 years old when I realized what it was that I had to do. I was walking down the street and I saw so many homeless men and women. I knew I had to find a way to help. 2 years later, I started a nonprofit group to feed the homeless. Hi, my name is Amber Kaufman, and today I'm 20 years old. For the past 10 years, the organization I created, Happy Helpers for the Homeless, has delivered love, food, and clothing directly to men and women living on the streets. We've also helped other young people discover the joy in serving others. You know there's something you need to do in your community. But maybe you thought, what can I do? I'm just one person. You'll be amazed at what a difference you can make if you just put your mind to it. Decide today to make that difference. Get out and live. Volunteer.
Brought to you by the Hitachi Foundation's Yoshiyama Award for Exemplary Service to the Community and this station.
We're talking about blended families today with Dr. Jennings, and Doctor, you have been taking us through some of the steps necessary, required really, for success in the second marriage, that blended family that we have here. What other words of wisdom can you share with us today?
Well, I think the real issue, again, and there's a different value system, is that that they respect each other. Even though you may have different values, different beliefs, if you're willing to grant each other that respect, as Paul says in Romans, each person must be fully persuaded in their own mind. If we grant the other person the freedom to come to their own conclusion, that we're open and willing to hear each other's perspectives, you can have dialogue about it, but you don't coerce, you don't pressure, you don't dominate, you don't abuse. It's when you become dominating, controlling, abusive, that things become unhealthy when the home. Kids can grow up in a home in which there are two different perspectives from the parents, one believing one way, one believing another way. But when the parents model respect, open thinking, willingness to hear the other person out, leaving people free to come to their own conclusions, and love each other in spite of the differences that they hold in certain values, then that actually in itself models very beautifully godlike principles, and the kids can grow up very healthy in a home like that. So we don't have to see everything eye to eye, but it's more difficult. It takes a more mature person to live in a home where there's a different value set, but it can be done, and I've seen it done. I also want to mention, though, early in the show, you said something about when, you know, we have lots of people being grafted into the family tree. Remember you said that in the opening?
Yes.
Okay. Well, it brought to my mind Romans, around chapter 10, I think, somewhere in Romans, where it talks about Christ being the vine and that the natural branches were broken off and the other branches were grafted in. And as we think about this blended family idea, isn't that what heaven is going to be? A grand blended family in which all of us are coming back into the unity of heart, mind, value system, and operate, again, it says in Hebrews 8:10, that the law of God is written on the hearts and minds. And as we come into that unity, then we love our neighbor as ourself. Greater love is no man than to give his life for a friend. And this is the type of love that we are to experience in our heart for people that aren't just not our biological relatives, but for humanity in general, that we come into a real brother and sisterhood of Christianity. We use those words often in church, brother so-and-so and sister so-and-so, but the heart rarely feels like that kind of love towards the people. It becomes a euphemism, really. But I think God's goal for us is to come into that unity where we love people as much as our closest biologic relatives, and we come back into that unity, being one people, really, from one descent, one parent, God, our ultimate creator.
Boy, the blended family concept can really be a visual aid to a child of how God blends us into his family. Am I on the right track here?
I think that's exactly right, and demonstrated, and I've seen many blended family homes in which there is really love. Not only love with the new stepdad and the mom and the child, but with the biologic father and the stepdad, and everybody gets along and they do things together, and there's real love and harmony amongst the whole group because they don't have self as the agenda. They really care about the other people. They care about the kids. They want the kids to be happy. They're willing to work together to put them first, and there's not this selfish motive of always trying to watch out for your own interest and get yourself ahead. And it really comes down to the heart issues at work. And oftentimes in the aftermath of a divorce, the mature are those who are able to learn from the pains of the past, take responsibility, grow from it, and not blame others. And so oftentimes, after the divorce, there are many people who have learned the lessons that went wrong in that first relationship, have matured, and are able to move forward with relating in a much healthier way, even to the ex-spouse, than they ever did while they were married. I've known many people that get along great as ex-spouses, but couldn't live together.
Before we leave this this area we're talking about here, I put it under the equation unequally yoked. If a Seventh-day Adventist marries a Muslim, you've got problems, because both Muslims and Seventh-day Adventists are very evangelistic in nature. Is this possible for this to work when Seventh-day Adventists and Muslims both want to convert each other? Is this opening this up to a real problem?
Can you clarify? You're saying if a Muslim and an Adventist were to marry each other?
Yes, marry each other, because Seventh-day Adventists are evangelistic in nature. We should be all Christians, and so are Muslims. In other words, the Muslim will try to get the spouse to become a Muslim, and the Adventist will be trying to get the spouse to be Adventist. Is that going to work, or is that impossible to work?
Again, there are several principles involved, and you can't use that question as a cookie cutter to all circumstances. Knowing the value systems of each involved, I can tell you the circumstances you described would work fairly well with an Adventist man and a Muslim woman. It wouldn't work well with a Muslim man and an Adventist woman. Okay, if you understand why I said that.
Yes, I do.
Okay, because the women in that culture are much more willing to be led by the spiritual leadership of the man, where the men will want to lead the women. And so there are cultural differences that make a big difference that you have to take into account. But if you're willing to practice the principles that Christ advocated, presenting truth and love and leaving others free, where you're willing to respect that autonomy and individuality, then that can work even in a circumstance that diverse. It can. But it will be very difficult in a circumstance that diverse, because you will miss so many things in common. Seventh-day Adventists will want to go to church on Saturdays. Somebody who's not an Adventist may go to church worship or mosque on Fridays or church on Sundays. And so the practice of the family cycles and the family routines will be broken each week, and it makes it more difficult. It's not an impossibility, but why would you intelligently, purposely make a choice to enter into a circumstance that adds further obstacles to the harmony of the home? I think it would not be a wise decision.
I'm learning something here, Dr. Jennings. What I hear you saying is that when you are facing a situation like this, the unequally yoked, when you have different values, whether they came upon you as time went by or whether you married into them, it is not our job as Christians, and please correct me if I'm wrong, and I know you will, it is not our job as Christians to convert anyone. It's our job as Christians to show Christ to people. Is that right?
There's no question about it. It's our job as Christians to live like Christ would have us live.
Yes.
And that's our job.
Okay.
And that's in the home as well as outside the home. And that is our responsibility. And then live like Christ lived means making decisions that are Christ-like decisions, using his values, his methods, his principles, being willing to follow the truth wherever the truth leads, not letting emotions overcome our good judgment in decision-making process. And when it comes to relationships, most bad relationship decisions and actions are made based on emotions, whether it's angry emotions, insecure emotions, lustful emotions, fear-based emotions. If you look at relationship problems, it's mostly due to the fact that people are making emotional-based decisions rather than reasoned out, truth-based, evidence-based, principle-based decisions.
So the question to ask, basically, when you go into a new blended home, when you want to create a blended family, is, can I live the faith that is in my heart? Can I live the Christ-like, this is for the Christian, can I live the Christ-like life in this new situation, in this new environment? And can my children live the faith that I'm teaching them and live as Christ wants them to live in this new family? Is that a good guideline to use?
Well, that would be the goal. The primary goal of healthy parenting is to use your influence to help your child to develop Christ-like character. That's the primary goal. Understanding the dynamics involved, we are born infected with fear and insecurity and self-centeredness. The remedy for fear and insecurity is love. Perfect love casts out all fear. Parents have the responsibility to create an atmosphere in which love flows well. They are the conduits, to be the conduits of God's love and God's methods into the home. As the healthier they are, the more effective and the more pristine that love flows into the home, and thus the greater the influence to help heal the child and help the child grow in a healthy way. The more immature they are, the more self-centered, the more areas in their own life they're still struggling to overcome, then the less clearly the love flows into the home and the more confusing it is as they children grow up in a home with a mixture of love and fear and insecurity and selfishness. And so that then causes greater difficulty for the children to be able to experience that healthy love, for them to be able to counteract the influences of their own fear-based nature that we're born with.
Well, as we're coming to the end of this broadcast today, and I know that I have learned a lot today, and listener, I hope you have too, but the take-home message that I got, Dr. Jennings, you painted it beautifully, that in heaven, that blended family that we're all going to be members of, that should be our goal, and that should be our standard to shoot for. How are we going to live in heaven? We're going to live in love. We're going to live in respect. We're going to live in compassion and for each other. We're going to live in an environment where we are others-oriented, and that all flows from the throne of grace, that all flows from God.
And that starts
here.
Our
time is just about up, Dr. Jennings. Yeah, what are your final thoughts on this?
Well, my thoughts are that experience of the heavenly love and the heavenly family starts here. If you can't love people here, you're not going to be there. I mean, that's the reality. I mean, John actually said that if you can't love your brother that you can see, you can't love God that you can't see. And so the whole point is that these opportunities are opportunities. Every painful experience we have, every broken relationship we go through is an opportunity to overcome, an opportunity to grow, an opportunity to experience God's healing grace in our life, an opportunity to forgive when wrongs have been done, an opportunity to extend love to those who are unlovely. It's an opportunity for us to grow, to be more like Christ in every aspect of our lives, and our kids will observe that reality. And when they face those difficult times, they'll have a model laid down in their own experience that they can see how love overcomes pain, how love overcomes fear, how love overcomes insecurity, and will give them a model for their future that we can move forward with.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Well, Dr. Jennings, thank you very, very much. I want to remind our listeners that if you'd like to learn more about this topic and all kinds of other topics, these shows, by the way, are located for your podcast enjoyment at www.comeandreason.com. That's www.comeandreason.com. You can hear shows we've done in the past, and this one will be up in just a couple days. Next week, Dr. Kay Kuzma will be with us. We're talking about effective parenting. Very, very important program. That's next week. Until then, may you use the simple solutions God placed in your heart today. Goodbye, everyone.
Simple Solutions is a production of Life Talk Radio and Dr. Timothy Jennings, and is made possible by your generous support. For more information, visit www.comeandreason.com.